This is 5-on-3. Center ice for all things Islanders, Rangers, and all news across the NHL on WFUV Sports.
Welcome back to 5-on-3. This is WFUV's best, if only, hockey podcast. I'm joined by some real puck luminaries here, truly an amalgamation of minds. Let's introduce them. The first one is Lou Orlando, and Matt DiBamonte is here. I don't know why. And Michael Matouche is also here, which I'm very happy about. So welcome, guys. How are we feeling after, well, not after round one, we still have Vegas and Dallas tonight, but how have we been feeling after round one of the playoffs? I'm sorry that I'm asking this question, because Jesus.
Nick,
I'm good.
It's so great to be here, man.
I bet.
When I heard you were hosting this week and I saw the events play out in round one, I just said, wow, I gotta be here. I gotta talk to Nick about this. And here I am, live and in person, ready to wish your team farewell.
Matt, you're a real jerk. You're a real jerk for doing this.
We're a whole bunch of jerks. That's what we are.
Nick, I'm surprised you didn't wear black to your funeral, bud.
Are we done? Can we get on with the episode?
Have some decorum.
Yeah, well, if the Hurricanes didn't have any decorum, I'm sure not. Let's talk about this series, since we're already somehow talking about it. Okay, the New York Islanders, they lost the series to the Carolina Hurricanes.
Sure did.
It was not pretty. Should we do like a little, Maddie, should we do like a little game by game recap and like, you know, say what we thought about each game?
I remember what happened in the games. I just remember vibes.
I also just remember vibes, considering that for one of the games, actually alluded to, we're going to go off topic here, but actually alluded to last, whenever 5-on-3 episode, actually, Nick, when you were on, I went to the Canuck. Well, we tried to go to a Hurricanes bar. It doesn't exist.
That's what I thought.
Well, we found that out a little bit later. But, yeah, missed the first two goals of that game. Vibes were high, though. Actually, Nick, I remember that night because I told you that I was watching, and I was very confident the Hurricanes were going to lose, given my track record with them. I thought I was giving you a win. That didn't happen. I actually was so confident in the win, by the way, Nick, with 2 minutes left in the game, I went to the bathroom and did not come out until the end of the game. So.
And the reason you were so confident is because, let's be real, and this is going to be one of the only few praises that I sing about your team. You have a very good hockey team. The Carolina Hurricanes are a very talented team. But I do want to say, and this is not being a salty Islanders fan, the Islanders very well could have won this series. And I think if we go game by game, I think I can perhaps prove that without a shadow of a doubt. Because in game one, I don't think you could – I think the Islanders outplayed the Hurricanes. It was a lack of finishing, to be honest. I think throughout, I would say, maybe 50 minutes of that game, the Islanders had the upper hand, but it was a lack of finishing. Fine, whatever. Game two – look, the game two. Oh, game two. Okay. Game two was pretty awful. I mean, the 3-0 lead halfway through, and then you can't push back. Absolutely just a debacle.
The two goals in 8 seconds is so special.
Sorry, excuse me. That was the 9-second one. That was the nine seconds one.
Yeah.
8 seconds would happen later. Game three, Islanders played a great game. Unfortunately, Ilya Sorokin did not. Varlamov had to come in halfway through, couldn't save it. I mean, you know, you go down 2-0 early, you come back, it's 3-1 before the end of the first, fought back 3-3, and then you allowed two goals in short order. This was just an absolutely brutal series. And Maddie, I'm going to give you a chance right now to sing your praises about the Carolina Hurricanes before Michael and I tear them to shreds. So go right ahead.
You know, I actually agreed with you on that point, Nick. I actually felt like the Islanders could have won more games. But the problem is the Hurricanes are just really good. And they, when you see this happen twice in the series with goals in, what, 8 and 9, like, crazy. Like, I don't know, Nick. The point is the Hurricanes very much have been a team that has gone up and down in terms of like being able to play through the entire game. And I kind of saw that towards the end of the series that they actually improved on that. Shout out to everybody on the team. Nick, sorry that it happened to you, that you lost this way, but better luck next year. At least you didn't get swept.
We watched the game.
It's called a gentleman's sweep for a reason. Michael, I want to get your take on this because the 2 goals in 9 seconds and then in game five, the 2 goals in 8 seconds, absolutely brutal. I want to read you a Patrick Waugh quote after we got eliminated, and then you
Tell me
can
the quote. Tell me the quote.
yeah, you want the quote? I feel
Yeah.
like we deserve a little bit better. I'm not saying we should have won that series. I'm saying we could go home right now and play game number six easily, and instead it's over. He said it feels empty. I also feel vacant, desolate, unfulfilled, probably lacking
Barren.
contents.
Yeah.
How do you feel, buddy?
Disgusted. This team constantly fails in big moments. I saw a stat, it was like 25 blown games in the third period this
True.
season. Disgusting. I'm happy that they competed to an extent and then were their typical Islander self and then killed themselves. But I mean, the team tried their best. I mean, seeing that sad Ilya in the hallway really was, I think, one of the big nails in the coffin. He looked so upset. That was terrible. I said that. I think he said that. I think this is an actual quote that he wanted to go have a cigarette in that moment. I
He
think he said
did.
that to someone.
He did.
I'm happy they didn't get swept. I'm really happy they didn't get swept. And
It felt like a sweep though, buddy.
you
And
have to think
I'm
everything would be different if they had Samuel Bolduc out there. That
listen.
things.
Okay. Let's
Oh,
just put
I
this
don't
on the
know.
record. Let's put this on the record. This is why the Islanders didn't win the series. It was an inability to punch back. It was they did not get enough from Horvat and Barzal except for in game four, which was an
Yes.
absolute electric factory. Thank God I was there. And they couldn't shut the door. I think those are the three things that the Hurricanes could do that the Islanders could not. Please give me a brief moment to complain about the officiating because I'm going to do so right now. Wes McCauley is a performance referee, and he should he people do not understand that he's actually not a good referee. He calls every single little flop that they see. Brady Shea, don't worry, someday the other one will drop, and until then, make sure that you're ready for that. That was remarkable. In multiple games, Hurricanes were diving everywhere. I felt like I was watching the Summer Olympics. It was absolutely brutal. Maddie, I want to get your take on the officiating as a Hurricanes fan, because at least from every Islanders fan's perspective, and I don't know how biased this is, so I'm glad I'm asking you. Was the officiating at least a little bit skewed in your view, or do you think I'm being ridiculous?
No, I'll give you the answer you want. It was a little skewed. It but Wes McCauley's funny.
Well, Nick, I'll say this. I thought
You serious?
the officiating across the board in round one was bad. There were like and we'll get into this, I think, when we talk about like Rangers Canes. There have been a lot of penalties across every single game, more so than I'm used to. Like, it's supposed to be playoffs in that the whistles get a little looser and you play more 5-on-5. Special teams is a huge part of this Islanders Canes game. It ends up being a huge part of Rangers Caps. I'm a little confused. It doesn't seem like there's any consistency in the way games are being called game to game. I think is it Anders Lee that had that awful tripping call on him? I mean, there you can probably go through every single game and find a blatant call that goes against the Islanders. That said, I do not think the Canes played anywhere close to their best series here. And I'm not saying that there's any shame in the Islanders losing to the Canes, because I think you play this series in 8 out of 10 times, maybe even 9 out of 10 times, Hurricanes are winning. But the way that the Islanders played after doing everything that they did to get into the playoffs and get the three seed in the Metro, like, man, it's a weird spot to go into the offseason where it just feels like you are again in no man's land. You're not bad enough to rebuild. You're not good enough to make a legitimate run. And now you're in a really weird spot with Ilya Sorokin, who is a was a complete mess in the playoffs. And you had to pull him in game three and rely on Varlamov. So there's a lot. If I'm an Islanders fan, just Islanders land in general, there should be a lot of weird and uncomfortable conversations happening.
I'm actually really glad you brought that up, because I think we should touch on what they should do in the offseason very briefly before we move on to the Rangers.
Say goodbye to Matt.
It's pretty clear, at least from my perspective, that Matt Martin and Cal Clutterbuck do not have a place on this team anymore. With that said, both of them said they don't want to retire. So, okay. I mean, those are two guys who have been responsible for this team's identity for a long time. Like, unfortunately, to use an Oppenheimerism, it was the blue-collar identity of the New York Islanders. But in addition to shedding those two guys, number three, Adam Pellick, was an absolute disaster in the last half of the year and in the playoffs. This guy was supposed to be on the pair with Ryan Pulock. Pulock was supposed to be the offensive force. Pellick was supposed to be the defensive force. He's been playing terrible defense ever since, and he is a full no-trade clause, so I'm very worried about that. In which case, you have to be looking at the fact that, okay, you have to make some changes. And as you mentioned, Lou, and I think correctly, you cannot fully rebuild this team. It has to be a retool. The thing that I like, which I heard in the end-of-season press conference from Lou Lamoriello, is that we're going to work on rebuilding this team. That means that Patrick Waugh is going to have a hand in this, which I'm very happy about. Because if you remember, one of the main reasons why he left the Colorado Avalanche of coaching was because he did not have a say in who the Avalanche were picking up. It seems like Lamoriello is open to that. So let me just maybe go through a couple guys who maybe they could look at, and I'd like to hear your guys' opinion on them. Would that sound good?
I'm game.
Incredible.
Okay. Let me talk about two Jakes who I think would be an excellent addition in lieu of perhaps shipping out Brock Nelson in his final year. Because let's be real, Nelson had 34 bingos this year. That was 69 points. Nice. And I think he has a lot of value in this last year. So how about Jake DeBrusk? Maybe, who's going into an expiring deal worth $4 million. Or, sorry, Maddie, maybe a little Jake Guentzel. I think Guentzel, who's also going into a final year, would also be a great pickup. I'd like to hear your guys' thoughts on the two Jakes.
I think you're tripping off of mescaline if you think that that Lou Lamoriello is signing Jake Guentzel. DeBrusk honestly feels like he could be an Islander. If you think that Lamoriello is dishing out the contract that Jake Guentzel is going to command, let's be pretty straightforward. I mean, first off, we've heard really like strong interest from the Canes in re-signing Guentzel, and the fact that they made
right.
it in the first place means that they're probably going to go balls to the wall to bring him back, because they need, God knows, they need a finisher. And yeah, I mean, I bet all the money I have in the world that he's not an Islander. So that's how I feel.
Fair enough. Mike?
I just still can't get over how old this Islanders team is in general. They're tied for the third oldest roster in the NHL. This team is average age of 29 years old. This team needs to find a way to. I'm a big fan of some of the guys we're calling out partially through the season, but it's some of these guys are just so old. And like the league, I mean, DeBrusk would be a big addition. Guentzel would be $1 billion man if we sign him. But oh my gosh, I want to see this team get younger.
And Nick, let me ask you this, Nick: does Jake Guentzel solve this team's issues? Because I'm being serious. Like, obviously, Jake Guentzel would be an improvement, and he'd be an awesome additional offensive piece to have. But it's not like you don't have offensive star power. Like, you have Horvat and Barzal, and frankly, Brock Nelson's been super slept on probably the last couple of years. Like,
yeah.
Is that what this team needs? Is it another pretty much offensive guy, not really a two-way game kind of guy? Is that going to solve all the issues? Is giving him $8 million, $9 million, whatever he's going to ask for?
It doesn't, which means you also need a retool on the blue line. I'd be looking for like maybe a Brady Shea on the defensive end. I think that would be a great pickup.
Carolina's take all Carolina's players.
We want them. They beat us. So overall, Yeah, I'm vacant inside. I feel like I've said my piece. Mike, is there
Well,
anything you want to say?
no.
Maddie, go
No.
ahead. Nick, actually, since you all have been so gracious to me last season when the Hurricanes got eliminated, I thought I'm not the host like you, but I thought I would give you the floor to do your own memorial. And I have some music queued up. I think this is your time to speak if you'd like to. So the floor is yours.
Okay, this was not planned in any way. Let me give some flowers to some players who deserve it first. First is Mike Riley. Dude, we picked you up in the last bit of the season. You were phenomenal. I would love to see you back on this team. You're not dead to me. If anything, you're more alive than anything. Bortuzzo, I don't think you're an Islander next year. Let's be real. You're 34. You replaced Mayfield. Good night to you, Sweet Prince. You were a great locker room guy, great vibes guy. You actually were the most open player to talk to, and you made eye contact with me while you talked to me, which was pretty nice. Made me feel like a person. Let's see who else. Ilya Sorokin, you're in a coma. I don't feel like he's dead. I feel like he's in like a coma. Minimal brain activity, just like Wes Macaulay. I think he'll get better. We'll see how he is. He has a fire under his butt. That's for sure. Kyle MacLean, buddy, I'd love to see more from you. You were great in the playoffs. You're going to be really cheap, which is nice. Come back, do an excellent job. Same thing with Bruce Lanezhakov. I thought you were great as well. The Cadillac, Semyon Varlamov, buddy, thank you for getting us there. I thought you were great until the end. You handled the tandem situation with grace and dignity. And finally, let's get to some people who maybe don't deserve that many praises. I'm gonna start with Adam Pellick. I graced on it very briefly, but you gotta find it again. You were a 2021 All-Star and you look like an absolute pylon in the defensive zone. I'd like to see you transform into something other than a cone, maybe a nice blooming tree of defensive prowess. We'll see if that ever happens. Noah Dobson, be like a little bit nicer to me. Like, I know you're going through a tough stretch, but like, buddy, I know it's tough. You can find it. And finally, to Patrick Waugh, take this bull by the horns, run this team, lead us to the promised land. That's all I've got to say, man. Rest in peace, Islanders. It was not fun while it lasted.
Hey,
That was awesome.
maybe he'll lead you to the promised land next season.
Don't say that. Okay, let's move on to the New York
You'll
Rangers,
fire
shall we?
Juan and hire Brind'Amour.
No, 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 no. No. Listen. No.
Okay, New York Rangers. Let's talk about this
I think this
team.
is where Maddie leaves.
Yeah.
Thank you, Maddie, for coming. It was not a pleasure.
Nick, can't wait to see you for. Well, it's not going to happen for the Hurricanes funeral this year because we're going all the way. But
I don't know about that, but we'll see.
Yeah, I don't know about that one, buddy.
Hey, cheaters never win.
Thanks for coming on the show.
You're welcome. See you never.
Bye. Okay, all right. Now that she's gone, let's say why we hate Maddie Bamonte.
Like, I'm still here.
She's so
Oh, dang
mean.
it.
Dude,
All
she's
right.
worse sometimes.
Stop you.
Let's talk about the Rangers, Lou, because this,
Let's do it.
I'm not going to say I called it, but I absolutely called it. I said they were going to get swept in four, and that's exactly what happened. The Washington Capitals should not have been a playoff team. I think everyone can agree with that. Let's just talk about your general takeaways from this series, because it was an absolute pummeling from the boys in blue. So tell me about it, kid.
Well, I think the biggest takeaway is that the Washington Capitals led for all of 3 minutes across 4 games. So listen, did the Rangers look the sharpest that they have ever been or completely dominate? Yes and no, right? Like Washington never stood a chance. And you're right, they are not a playoff team. They are slow. They are bereft of talent, and the talent that they do have is Tom Wilson, who is a bleeping moron and supports smallpox with every fiber of his being. So Tom Wilson did the Capitals no favors. And yeah, I mean, the Rangers at times sleptwalked through this series and did not have to pay the price for it because Washington is really not a great hockey team. So where I'm at going into round two against an excellent Canes team, I'm not as worried as some people that go, okay, Rangers did not play their best. They still swept. Sweeping in hockey is still in the playoffs, not easy to do. I'm not worried about the week and a half off. The Rangers have actually played better when they've had extended time off, and this is a team that's been able to jump right back into speed. Hurricanes have been off for a week too, so I'm not super concerned about that. The big thing I'm looking to see is you're going to have to play a much different style of hockey than you had to play in round one. I'm curious whether how much the Rangers will actually have to adjust their style of play, because we always talk about playoffs, the ice shrinks, and some of the stuff you did in the regular season doesn't translate. The Rangers were able to play the way that they did in the regular season in round one against the Capitals. A lot of that has to do with a lack of speed and a lack of defense on the Capitals side, to the point where those last couple games, especially games two and games three, did not really feel like playoff games. I'm curious to see how they adjust to playoff style hockey, because we know that's what the Canes are going to bring. We know Rod Brindamore's style. We know that system that they play. They're going to be aggressive. They're going to be super aggressive on the penalty kill. Like, the Canes are an awesome, super deep team. It's going to be an electric battle. I'm shocked if this goes less than six games. Rangers, you're in for, like, one of the toughest battles that you'll probably have to play this postseason. Again, the road, however far you go, the road's not getting any easier from here on out. So this is, like, lock-in time. I still go back to the end of the day. Like, Ranger fans should be confident. The Rangers should be confident. They've done everything that they've done up until this point. Won the President's Trophy, swept round one. They're in an awesome spot. They're getting healthier. Maybe they heal back for this series. So I think that you're going to be in for some of the most exciting hockey that we've seen this playoff so far.
Absolutely. And I think there are a couple really big questions about this series. The first is that the Carolina Hurricanes are so much faster than the Washington Capitals. You could argue they're one of the fastest teams in the league. So I'm going to be interested to see how the Rangers adjust to that. But also, as you mentioned, the Carolina special teams is as good, if not better, than the New York Rangers.
If I'm not mistaken, they are the top penalty kill in the league.
They are.
And they are an aggressive penalty kill. They send out Aho and Teravainen, so they got a little bit of Rangers in them while they'll create offense on the PK, but they'll also meet you out at the blue line. And the Rangers have been better than previous seasons with dealing with aggressive penalty kills. That used to be a big bugaboo. But you still see, if you go back and you watch some of the regular season games, the way Florida played them back in December, I think there's a Canes game this year where they struggled against them on the power play. So Carolina's aggressive penalty kill, we kind of mentioned in the Islander series how big special teams played a factor in round one. If the whistles don't loosen up at all, and we're seeing power plays on both sides, I do think that probably, is an advantage to Carolina.
And that will definitely be a factor there, Mike, because honestly, when you look at these two great special teams, I'm not going to say they're going to cancel each other out, but you could certainly see, that at least makes the 5-on-5 so, so important, which, we've talked about with the Rangers, to where maybe that's their one struggling point. I mean, even in the Capitals, they had like a 38% expected goals on the 5-on-5, which is not remarkable in any stretch of the imagination. But against Carolina, a team that does like to take away significant portions of the ice, the 5-on-5 is what I'm going to be looking for. The special teams account for themselves. We could see them sort of counterbalance each other. And I think the 5-on-5 is going to be really big, Mike.
Something that I'm wondering is, have the Rangers played enough hockey in recent days with the sweep and all? I always think, like, rest versus rust. I don't think it's going to be that big of a problem, in my opinion, at least. But if you're – it's a huge step up from the Capitals to the Canes now. I don't know if that's going to be a problem for the team that hasn't really competed with a competent hockey team in probably what, 2 weeks, 3 weeks now?
It's about as big of a leap as you can make,
Yeah.
honestly, within the playoffs. And now get in there now.
I was going to say that it'll come down to, and I hate to say it, but the goaltending was not a factor in the Capitals series. Goaltending will absolutely be a factor in this series. I mean, Freddie Anderson and Igor were both very, very good in the first round. So these are two goalies that are hitting their strides at the right time. And if one of them has an off game, you're going to hear a lot more about it than you would have in the first round.
Let me say this about the 5v5. We rightfully give a lot of credit to Carolina for how deep they are, and we give Brind'Amour a lot of credit for getting the most out of his team, where I think there are a lot of people in the media that say you take this roster and you put it somewhere else, you take the players, you put it somewhere else, they're not going to play the same way, you're not going to get the same results. And that's absolutely true. I don't think the national media, and it's come across, but in the fact that you look at a lot of the prognosticators, the projections, everyone's favoring Carolina. All the systems analytically favor Carolina. They're the betting odds favorite. I don't think people are giving enough credit to just how deep the Rangers are. Outside of Matt Rempe, I think they match up really well with this Carolina team, just being able to skate with them. I'm curious to see how long Hedl's going to be out for, because it doesn't sound like he's playing today. And it sounds like it's Rempe. I think that's a bad matchup for the Rangers. That's not a guy that they trust in the third period. And these are going to be close third period games where you're going to be playing 11 forwards to 12 forwards. That's an advantage to Carolina. But if they either get Brodzinski
Yeah.
or Hedl back, like that's I trust the Rangers' ability to skate with Carolina. And I love like the Rangers' third line right now, which is Wennberg, Kako, Cooley. That's not a line that you look at across the league and be like, oh man, that's an awesome line. But you know what? That's a Carolina style line. The way that they've been playing, the way that they outchanced Washington in that series, the way they outchanced teams down the stretch, right? That's Nick. I've come on and talked about how awesome that third line has been and
Yeah.
Alex Wennberg's been such a key addition for them. Like that third line plays hurricane style hockey. They dominate possession, they shoot the puck. That's why all the metrics like Carolina is that they dominate possession, they take a ton of shots, they get a ton of shots on goal. And those are all valuable. Igor handles shots on goal well, so I think this series is a lot more even than the media is portraying. I'm not trying to knock Carolina or bring them down a peg. Like I
I
want
am.
to emphasize, they're a really good hockey team. They're super deep. Their blue line, even with Tony DeAngelo, and the fact that Tony DeAngelo is playing second line on the D pairs is crazy. But I think they're getting Pesce back this series. Maybe that's up in the air, but like even without him, like Slavin, Burns, Orlov, Chatfield, Brady Shea, like those are five. I think they have the best decor when healthy in the league. So that if they're an awesome team, I'm just saying the Rangers are really good too, and this is a lot more even than the media is portraying.
And I'm glad you brought up the Rangers' depth because at the deadline, I think the additions, and it's supported by the stats, the additions of Roslovic and Wennberg
Oh my
were
God.
absolutely huge to the 5-on-5. The expected goals on the 5-on-5 jumped up something like 4 or 5% since their addition. So I think people are seriously underestimating the depth. I think that's a great point, Lou.
Let me talk about Roslovic for a second, just because after game one, and when people were starting to talk about, oh, if Hedl gets back, who's getting scratched? And Rempe had the goal in game one, everyone said Roslovic. And after game one, Roslovic turned it on. I think he had four goals. One of them is an empty netter, but he has four goals in that Washington series. He's a guy that disappeared in the second half for the Rangers. Like, again, was hyped up as like, oh, he's this fast guy. We'll put him in that first line with Mika and see if he sparks. And really, Mika just more got himself going, and that line was good in the playoffs. But Roslovic had been kind of a non-factor. I thought played a great series against Washington. I don't know if he'll be able to translate that to Carolina, because again, that's a different beast and a different animal. But like Wennberg's game definitely translates, and you hope that Roslovic can carry over. I mean, his snipe on the power play in game, I want to say game two, is insane. One of the crazier goals we've seen this postseason.
Yeah, absolutely. And is there anything else you want to touch on in this little preview before we head on to Toronto and Boston?
I think you'll see the goaltender advantage of that the Rangers have play more of a factor than both of the round one series. Like, not Anderson played great against the Islanders.
Great.
Igor's been on a different level. And I think the Rangers offensively are going to challenge Anderson in a way that the Islanders really weren't able to consistently. Again, like, don't forget, the Islanders, when they played well, had success against the Carolina Hurricanes offensively. The downfall was that was the defensive lapse. And that's the Rangers have had defensive lapse. So again, like, that's not like, I'm not saying that it's going to be a completely different animal, but they've been more consistent. The Braden Schneider and Keandre Miller pairing's been great. Trouba was awesome in round one with Gustafsson, so the D line's playing about as good as you can. I we're in for a lot of fun. Maddie and I are gonna have a blast going back and forth here, and we'll try and see if, according to the website, Slattery's is a Hurricanes bar. We checked the Carolina Hurricanes website, so I don't know what's going on there. They were only showing Knicks on our first date, so it's wild stuff. We're still looking for a Carolina Hurricanes bar, but I don't know.
All right, well, it's confirmed. Mike and I will be third and fourth wheeling when you least expect it. But
Oh,
let's
yeah.
move on. Let's move on to this game that wrapped up last night, to which I was already in bed watching this, almost falling asleep because of how putrid the scoring was in the first couple periods. And then finally, Willie Nils gets the Leafs on the board. Who was it that tied it up for the Bruins?
It was
30
right
seconds
after
after.
I,
It was 30 seconds after. Regardless, it would be Pasta in overtime to win it for the Bruins. Thank heavens. I don't know how I would be able to deal with the online reaction from Leafs fans of winning the series. And
it was
let's
Lindholm. Just because
Lindholm.
Lindholm has a great game. He has the stretch pass to connect with Pastrnak. Like, he had an
Right.
awesome game
Oh,
seven.
that pass
And
was what. Do you actually think that they practiced that? Because getting that bounce off the boards was incredible. That was one of the craziest sauces, because he shot that hard to get that rebound off that board. That was impressive.
Really, you don't expect Pastrnak to be there right in front of the net after that. So that just speaks to his superb positioning. But let's talk about this, because I'm gonna give the Leafs their flowers first, because if I'm gonna be honest, as soon as I heard Matthews was down, I was gonna say this series is over, and it wasn't. I thought the Leafs showed incredible fight. Willie Nils really put this team on his back. Matthews came back in game seven. So really, if you go 1-4 with Matthews on your team, and then you don't lose with Matthews off your team, obviously there's no connection there. Matthews is a very talented player. It just goes to show, though, this team doesn't necessarily need the star power to be a contender.
do you buy into, I saw online, like, they call it the Patrick Ewing theory, that sometimes when you have a star who's good but maybe not great or hasn't been a proven winner, and the team plays through him almost to a fault, that they're better when they play more team,
Now,
let's say selfless hockey, without that star player in? Because Toronto looked at their best in this series undeniably without Matthews. And again, Matthews, I'm not going to like go into this for the conversation. He's one of the best players in the league, undoubtedly. You can make case he's the top goal scorer in the league. He was this season. But it maybe he's not, maybe for Toronto, who we already heard, if they lost in round one, that there's going to be, that core's going to look different, and that big four is probably getting broken up in some way. You have a really tough time selling your Leaf fans on parting ways with Austin Matthews. At the same time, this team undoubtedly needs some type of change. Yes, they battle back valiantly in this series, but something like that is not a team, even if they get to round two, that's not a team that's going on a run.
And in my mind, the first to get cold is probably going to be Mitch Marner, because let's face it, Tavares doesn't have the value that you need if you want to retool it. Marner actually does. He has some solid years to go in his career, and you could trade that for some defensive bolstering. So I could totally see that as a situation there. But let's remember, to your point, do I think that Matthews being gone had an effect? Maybe. But you also have four of the top 10 most highly paid players in the league by AAV. So it's not like there's a lack of star power and then they came on. You were just missing one of your big guys. So props to the Leafs, but thank heavens the Bruins won. Mike, what was your reaction to watching the
Thank
series?
God the Bruins won. I've been dancing on the Leafs grave all night long. What a piss poor organization. Who do they think they are? I hate the Leafs so much, and I'm so I hate the Bruins this much. I hate the Leafs this much more. I hate because their fans think that they're the hot team in the league, and they constantly choke in the playoffs. Since the 04-05 lockout, they've won one series round in the playoffs. The Sabres have won two, and the Sabres haven't made the playoffs in 13 years. Who do they think they are? Who do they think they are? Mitch Marner is totally gone. He was what game was that? Was that game like 3, 4, 5 where he was crying on the bench? And Nylander had to come over and say, dude, this isn't juniors. Are you serious? Yeah. Who does he think he is? Oh my gosh. What a I'm I had a great night yesterday. I had a great time.
I'm very glad you were able to work in a Sabres reference there. But
thank you.
The thing is that I actually don't hate the team of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Over the past couple years, yes, it's always fun and fashionable to hate the Leafs. And obviously watching Paul Bissonnette fry is always a good laugh. But man, I start to feel bad for the players because the narrative around these players from Leafs fans also is that this team doesn't care. They just want to go to Cancun to play golf. And they showed that this, like in this series, they were a serious, serious team. They have too much talent. And that I think is sort of the final point that I can make about this is that a rebuild is not in the works. You don't need to rebuild this team. They're too good to rebuild. It just happens to be that you can't perform in the playoffs, and there's not really a quick fix for that, Lou.
Yeah, is rebuilding even an option? You just signed Nylander long-term.
Yeah.
Matthews is on a big deal. Yeah, he could ask for a trade. I think that maybe there's a world where, you know, 3 or 4 years down the road with the right moves – that you can make this team a little bit deeper. And I think it probably does mean that you're dropping at least one of the big four and spreading out the AAV a little bit more evenly. And you combine that with the fact that the cap's going to go up and you're going to have more room to spend and make your team deeper. Like you do need star power to win at the NHL level. And the Leafs have that. They're going to need a better blue line. They're going to need, they need to see some better goaltending. Although Samsonov, really down the stretch of that series, Samsonov was awesome. And so was Joseph Woll for that matter. Like the goaltending for the Leafs was not
Woll.
The goaltending for the Leafs, especially, you know, post game 4 was awesome. So it's a weird spot where this series very quickly became a matchup between who was going to choke more, because the Bruins choked mightily by blowing a 3-1 lead with Matthews out. The Leafs, we know that they choke and they can't get out of round one. And I think I gotta say this: I think it's perfect that the NHL is made the winner of that game play today against Florida. Whoever won Game 7 is getting destroyed by an awesome Florida Panthers team. And I think it's so fitting that they don't even get a day of rest, because that's what you get for putting up that awful, just wild series that did not deserve to happen like that.
Well, I'm glad you were touching on the goaltending, because I think Samsonov did put up some good games and deserves credit for that. Another goalie who put up some great games and actually brought his team to the next round is Artur Seelovs of the Vancouver Canucks, who came in as the third string goaltender. I think as soon as Demko went out, the odds for the Vancouver Canucks just absolutely plummeted. And then DeSmith goes out and the odds plummet more. And then Seelovs in Game 6 throws up an absolute gem of a shutout and then is excellent from then on. This guy, I'm very happy that he, you know, he's what, 23 from Latvia, only played 9 games in the NHL before this. I mean, just what a story for him. And how about the Vancouver Canucks, who go into Nashville, which is arguably one of the toughest places to play in the NHL. They have the 0-0 game and then finally scratch one across in the last minute. I mean, good for the Canucks, man, because you were actually worried about them after Games 1 and 2 against the Preds.
Right. Initial takeaway is, God, don't put Casey DeSmith as your backup goaltender, because wherever he goes, it seems like goaltender injuries to your 1 and 2 follow. Pittsburgh 2 years ago. It is crazy. I guess this is now 3 playoffs in a row where we've seen a third string goalie get in because Vegas had to deal with that 2 years ago. It was Pittsburgh, and they get knocked by the Rangers in that first round in seven. But I mean, shout out Vancouver. I mean, one probably the best pass of Brock Besser's life to get that game-winning goal 90 seconds left in the third period. No, man, listen, Vancouver, I kept an eye on them after Demko went down because that was a big blow for me. I think Vancouver is good enough to get to the cup final. I had a lot of that riding on Demko, saving their ass and being a wall in net. And they're going to have to make up for the fact that it sounds like that Demko injury is pretty serious. They're not ruling him out for the entirety of the playoffs, but like, you're not counting him walking through that door in the next week or two. This Vancouver team is stacked both offensively and on the blue line. Ton of speed. The West is stacked, so nothing's going to be easy for them. But like, again, if anyone's sleeping on Nashville at this point, you're just not educated. Like, Nashville deserved and earned their way into the playoffs and was a really tough out. So that's a really impressive win by Vancouver, just beyond their third string goalie in there. Like, that's a really tough Nashville team that gave Vancouver some trouble. And Vancouver ends up rallying and comes up with, I think, one of the more impressive series wins that we saw in round one.
And shout out to Yusei Saros, who put up an excellent, excellent series against the Canucks. That's not an easy offense to go up against.
I mean, right, we dreamed about a Saros versus Demko goaltender matchup. I know Demko goes down right away, but that goaltender matchup still delivered big time.
For sure. We look at this upcoming series for the Canucks. It's going to be Stuart Skinner in the pipes for the Edmonton Oilers, who last season in the playoffs posted an 883. That's not very good in 12 games. This year, that has jumped about 30 points. He was nothing short of great against the LA Kings, who had some really good opportunities against him, and he absolutely stoned them there. Skinner versus Seelovs, that's certainly not something you had in your book, but I think if any series has an ability for goalies to steal games, I think this is going to be the one that you're looking at to where, oh, if Seelovs can post up like a game six sort of thing like he did in last series, if Skinner can turn on his first half of the year sort of deal. I mean, if we remember, after Jay Woodcroft got fired, Skinner's stats like skyrocketed, which is something you don't usually see after a coaching change for a goaltender. But man, he's been great ever since. And I don't know, can we get some predictions for Canucks Oilers?
I think whichever one of these two teams wins has a good shot at the cup, purely because I want a Canadian team to get the cup again. I think that'd be cool. But honestly, I feel like I want to see more out of him in the playoffs. I know he's the stud and I know he's the man, but I'm looking forward to just seeing these two teams compete for, I guess, the right for a virtuous Canadian NHL Stanley Cup champion.
Yeah, and Lou, I mean, let's be real. The Oilers were kind of very fortunate, as you mentioned earlier, with a lot of penalties being called in that Kings series. And if we don't see that sort of reduction in the amount of penalties called, I don't know. They had in the last three playoff series against the LA Kings, the Edmonton Oilers had a 48% power play percentage, which is absolutely ridiculous.
Oh
This
my
team on the
goodness.
power play is the most lethal power play, I think, in the league. Do you think if we don't see a reduction in the amount of penalties that this could be an Oilers stomp?
I don't think it's going to be a stomp. Again, I still have a lot of faith in Vancouver. I'm not going to discount like Edmonton. I think the addition of a guy like Corey Perry is big for a team that really has not gotten the respect and has not been viewed respectfully from a playoff team standpoint. I'm still not sure how much I'm ready to buy into them yet. I like that the goaltending is in a much better spot than it feels like they've been in past playoff series. And what can't you say about them offensively? I know there were talks in Hudson Fascist, our group chat, about like, man, Avs Oilers could be pretty crazy. That could just be an offensive bloodbath. I still think if De I because I think you could see Demko get back for the Western Conference Finals, that a Vancouver Colorado series would be mighty entertaining. And I'm not going to sleep on Vancouver here. I think I'll pick them. It'll probably be seven, maybe six. I don't know. I think I have to see a little bit more from Edmonton's overall game. We know how good their power play is. But right, Nick, you were locked in to Oilers Kings. Am I being a
Yeah.
little too harsh on the Oilers right now?
I don't think you are because the Oilers, at least to me, looked like the same regular season Oilers to where they might have 40 minutes of excellent hockey and 20 minutes of some of the worst hockey that you've ever seen. When this team is not playing defense, you can walk all over them. And it's odd to see the LA Kings walk all over a team offensively. That's not the sort of thing that they do. They
They
like to play
scored a
hard on the boards.
1-3-1 and bore you to death. Sorry.
Exactly. And there were parts of this series where I'm like, oh my God, the Kings look like the Carolina Hurricanes in the offensive zone. This is absolutely ridiculous. And that's not to praise the Kings because they did not play well. That's to say that the Oilers defense cannot, I don't think, play a full 60 minutes. And I while we're sort of running low on time here, I do want to touch on this series that's not completed yet. The Vegas Golden Knights and the Dallas Stars, which in my opinion has been the best hockey that we've seen in the first round. I think they have both played very well. I think Dallas has maybe been the better team, but hey, how about Vegas, or sorry, how about Dallas after going down, what was it, 2-0 to start?
Yeah, they 2-0 and
Yeah.
they lost both those games at home, then had to go on the road. They win those two road games, they come home, they take a 3-2 lead, and then, props to Vegas, they win at home to force a game seven. But I mean, right, there's a lot of pressure on Dallas here. I remember talking with Jack when they went down 2-0, like, all right, like game three decides this series. If Dallas goes down 3-0, I'm sorry, I don't think that you're beating that Vegas team. And I'm not bought in on Vegas being the cup favorite by any means or anything like that. Like, I think it's clear that Mark Stone missed the second half of the season and that there's not full chemistry there. But there's still a
Yeah.
lot of talent on that team, and for that team to go up 3-0 would have been the dagger. And for a Dallas team that was vying for the President's Trophy into the final week, it's probably the deepest Dallas team that they've ever had in this recent iteration of, the Robertson, Ottinger, Jamie Benn, Sagan core. I would ride with Dallas. I think that they're a super complete team. I think you're seeing this a lot in the West. There are a lot of really well-balanced teams. Edmonton's not one of them, as we just talked about, but like teams like Dallas are really well structured. They kind of remind me of, like, even in the East, like the way that Carolina's balanced down the line, the way that the Rangers are balanced in all three facets. Like, Dallas is just so well balanced that if I had to, put my money on someone, I'd take Dallas in the game seven, especially at home. That said, this is probably gonna be one of those that if it doesn't go into OT, you're probably talking about like late third period heroics deciding this game. I mean, kind of tough for either team. Like, one of Vegas and Dallas isn't making it out of the first round, and that is kind of crazy. I know that Vegas limps in with some of their cap circumvention stuff, but that's still a really good team on paper. So like, either way, felt like the series just kind of always going to seven games, at least before it started. So, yeah.
And Mike, maybe to play a little devil's advocate here, the Dallas Stars, yes, they in this series have 57% of expected goals. However, in the last two games of the series, in game five and game six, Vegas has had the better expected goals share. They've had over 55% in both games. Vegas could be trending in the right direction, and especially after last game, the 2-0 shutout. What if Vegas just keeps rolling? I see that as a very, very serious
I
possibility.
think it's a possibility that I'm scared of. This game coming up tonight is going to be a spectacle to watch. And I could see it going very easily either way. Lou, you definitely talked about how it's going to come down to that third period and who steps up. And I'm just listing off guys in my head. I don't want to say that Jack Eichel can do it, because I hate his guts so much, but I feel like he's a guy who's really made the storybook with their win last year. I feel like it could totally just be, I could see him stepping up and putting this series to bed, which I really don't want to see because it's just been such back and forth, such entertainment.
I mean, right,
It's
the knock on Dallas for a while has been, even when Ottinger goes superhuman mode, that they
yes.
really haven't had it translate to playoff success. And so that's the
Yeah.
thing I think that scares you about a game seven is like Vegas has been in like in numerous playoff situations. Like
Yeah.
they, it's crazy that they've only, when did they come into the league? 2017? Right. It's
Yeah.
like, so, and I guess now we're talking about like that's been a little bit of a longer time. But like that's what scares me about this series. Like Vegas has all that playoff experience. And I wonder how much that comes into play in a game seven of this
Yeah.
magnitude.
And you talk about the Dallas depth, but it's not like Vegas doesn't have its own fair share of depth. If anything, they're equally,
Yeah.
maybe if not more deep than the Dallas Stars. I mean, with those deadline acquisitions, I'm just looking at the lines right now of the Vegas Golden Knights, and I want to cry. The fact that Noah Hanifin's on your third pair is absolutely upsetting. I hate that. I hate that Willie Karlsson is your third line center. That shouldn't be the case. Barbashev, Stephenson, and Mark Stone is your second line. I think any team would want that to be their first line because you have Hertl, Eichel, and Marchessault. That is the best top six in all of the NHL, and I don't think you can make an argument that it's not.
Yeah.
I'm not going to argue with you. I mean, that's why you think everyone hates Vegas. They were already good, and then because of Mark Stone being on the IR, they were able to get Hertl and Hanifin, and they re-sign Hanifin to a huge contract, and they'll have to pay the price for it because I don't think they're going to be able to get, Marchessault back.
Right.
But I mean, yeah, this might be honestly, at least from a talent perspective, this might be the best iteration of Vegas that we've seen. I mean, they feel
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
it
that's
feels
not
like
crazy
it
to
feels
say,
like one of
yeah.
those like those Dodgers super team years, right? But think about the super teams, right? We've seen it across all sports. Super teams don't always translate to success. And so that's why I kind of hold out hope like Dallas is a team that's been playing together for a lot longer with that core and all of that talent together, and it did translate to success. They were dominant in the West.
Yeah, I think Vegas, ever since the deadline, has been waiting for these players to click. And I'm really scared that game five and game six, they finally clicked. Like, what if it just now happened and we could be seeing the absolute surge of the Vegas Golden Knights? I'm terrified of that.
It wouldn't surprise me.
What about you cheaters? Mark Stone's wife taking that picture of, oh my gosh, of the
That was
fan
funny.
equipment.
I really like that. I
Oh,
thought that was
that
funny.
was a good chuckle, but what about you cheaters? Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
All right, so before we go, can we get some round two predictions on who's going to win each series? How does that sound?
Yeah, let's do it.
I
All right,
like
let's
that.
start.
Rangers and Canes, Lou Orlando, go ahead.
Rangers in six. Everyone's hyping up the Canes and all that stuff. It's gonna be a tough series. I would not be shocked if it goes seven, but part of me just feels like this Rangers season has been special. They really outplayed the Canes in the regular season. I do buy into that a little bit, and this Rangers team's really good. Rangers in six.
I agree with that. I can th see taking a little bit longer, maybe even Rangers, probably likely Rangers in seven, just because of how competitive this Hurricanes team is. I think it's definitely going to be the Rangers over the Hurricanes, just because the Hurricanes have been resting for so long. Rangers, they pummel most teams that they play. I see it happening with this one too.
I also see Rangers in six. I don't see any reason why they're. I don't understand why they're not the favorites, if I'm honest. I know, not Vegas Golden Knights, but Vegas, the odds creators, love the Carolina Hurricanes. They had them at plus 500 when the playoffs
All the
started.
analytics love the Hurricanes. It's
They love
BS.
them.
Yeah. They love them. Okay, so that's all for that one. Let's talk about Bruins Panthers, where I actually have. And this might sound ridiculous. I have Panthers in four. I don't think the Bruins are ready to play this type of team. Yeah, I have Panthers in four. This team's a juggernaut.
I'll give the Bees one game, but Panthers in five. The Bruins not getting any rest is not going to help what was already a nightmare matchup for them, and they did not impress against Toronto of all teams. That this should be a pretty swift victory for Florida.
The P is going to be a great team. It's going to be seeing Sam Reinhart compete. He's going to be a baller. He's a stud. It's going to be the Panthers, probably in five. I could possibly see six. I could see Pasta doing Pasta self, getting a game. But I don't see a situation where the Bruins succeed in this series.
Fair enough. Let's move on to the West. Let's see. The matchup is Edmonton and Vancouver. We already discussed this briefly. I have Vancouver in seven.
Same.
I have Vancouver in seven. Yeah.
Right with you.
Yeah, this is one that I can't decide because I feel like both teams are evenly matched. I feel like it's going to come down to that last seventh game. I would give it to the Canucks, honestly. I feel like they have a good shot compared to it's just whoever gets that coin flip in that last game.
And finally, sorry to Stambor, we haven't talked about this team at all yet this episode, but the Colorado Avalanche will be playing the winner of Dallas Vegas. I don't know if I like the Avalanche against either of those teams, if I'm honest. Like, yeah, obviously rest is a factor, but both, I mean, Dallas Vegas, like we said, is the best hockey that we've seen in this playoffs. And I think the Avalanche could be in for a rude awakening. Give me either Dallas or Vegas in six over the Colorado Avalanche.
I gotta go Avs. I mean, there's gotta be something to, I tweeted this out, but they put up 5.6 goals per game against what's going to be the Vezina Trophy winner, Connor Hellebuyck. Like, and that's a really solid defensive Winnipeg team. I know that those games got very open ice and very back and forth, and Winnipeg played into Colorado's style, probably to their detriment.
Yeah.
I don't know how many teams out there can stop Colorado's offense. I still have questions about their goaltending. I think you're going to have questions about the goaltending all year long, but guess what? I think those questions were probably there 2 years ago when Darcy Kemper was in net. And it didn't matter because Colorado plays at a different speed and they got some different players, right? McKinnon, McCarr, Nichushkin's been balling. You got Rantanen. Like, that team is, I'm going to go into a little more detail here because we haven't talked about them at all. Like, Sambor's Colorado Avalanche are legit. And I don't know how many teams out there can really stifle that offense. I think it'd be a great series. I'm kind of hoping that it's Dallas Avs. I would go Avs in seven.
What an absolute jinx from Jesse Pollock with his Jets team. Oh my gosh. He makes that team look like that's an embarrassment the way he's acting on social media. But the Avalanche are genuinely an avalanche. They're taking out any team that gets in their way. It's, like over 20 goals in five games is insane.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's insane. 20. It's unfathomable to me.
Yeah.
It's going to be nearly impossible in my mind to stop that team in a series. Oh my gosh, they're gonna stomp whoever wins. I think, only not maybe a stomp, I think definitely six games, but it's gonna be, I'm gonna be betting the over on every single game. So
yeah, I gotta say, I don't like how, for the most part, how in lockstep we all are with each other. That usually does
well,
not
we just disagreed right there. We just disagreed.
Yeah,
right
and
there,
that was the first time. That usually doesn't bode well for us.
No, it generally does not. Maybe we'll see some surprises, but no surprise here. The episode is over. I'd like to thank Lou Orlando and Michael Matuch for joining us today. No thanks to Maddie Bamonte for her cameo. That's all, folks, I suppose. So for WFUV Sports, I'm Nick Palmer. This is Lou Orlando. That's been Michael Matuch, and Maddie Bamonte has been here. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you guys on the next episode.